Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey there, if you're listening to this and you support us on Patreon, you can hear it via the Patreon page ad-free.
One, two, tres, cuatro.
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we talk with author Marissa Moss about the state of women in country music. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. But first, we review some new music from Santi Gold and Sudan Archives.
Can't talk about big things, don't make none, cause deep down they sleep. Watch how two bigs walk to the top, got a ticket going one way. Hey, pretty.
A track called High Priestess from the new Santi Gold album Spirituals, her first one in quite some time. It's been
6 years, I believe.
A big break for Santi Gold. Santi White, originally known as a Philadelphia artist, began working in the music industry as a talent scout, Jim, and then as a songwriter in the 1990s. She was both a producer and a songwriter for a really great album in 2001 by an artist named Reese, who I never felt got enough love. But if you listen to that Reese album in 2001, another Philly artist, you get a sense of where Santi Gold is coming from as a songwriter and a singer in her own right. She shifted into performing with a punk band named Stift for a number of albums and then went solo with her 2008 debut album, Santo Gold. She had to change to Santi Gold soon after because apparently there was another artist using a similar type of name.
Who we've never heard from since.
Yeah. Doesn't seem to have mattered. But that record made a giant impression. And she has been releasing albums, in about at every 4 to 6 year clip ever since. Each one showing a diversity of musical styles, expanding the reach. In some ways, I feel like she was at the very forefront of creating that blend of rap, pop, and dance floor club music that has become, ubiquitous on the pop charts now. But she was way ahead of the game in 2008. The new album is called Spirituals. We're going to play a track from it before we review it. It's called Fall First from Santi Gold on Sound Opinions.
Fall First from the new Santi Gold album, Spirituals. Greg left out in your brief introduction is she reached many more people than she had in the past by appearing on those two Tyler, the Creator albums in 2018, 2019. I love this album. It's short. 10 songs long. The name indicates her inspiration that she's drawing from African-American folk song, gospel music, traditional music of the church and of the community, recorded during COVID when everybody was reaching for inspiration. That's where Santi Gold found hers. I think I don't want to tip my hand about our second review, but both of these reviews today are by really strong African-American women who refuse to recognize genre boundaries. Mm-hmm. Santi Gold, since she was told, she has said, by someone in the music industry in her earlier punk days that a black woman was never going to make it in punk, that she has been spitting in the face of all genre constrictions. So in the space sometimes of a single verse, we are hopping from, you know, indie pop to electronic dance music, reggae to rock, and hints of that gospel music. You know, the message is inspiring, people suffering, down and down we keep shuffling. The sound is inspiring, her voice is energizing, and I don't think she's ever made a bad move, but this album is really welcome now.
Yeah, well, you're right about the genre mixing. She's been doing that from the start, way ahead of that game, as I said, and it continues here. There's no letdown in the creativity. The reason for calling the album spiritual, she talked about the whole idea of you know, gospel music being such a vital part of the black experience in America. Enslaved people getting through horrifying conditions, you know, basically, as she said, songs that got black people through the ungetthroughable. This is her version of sort of, you know, continuing that tradition. You know, there's been a number of barriers that she's faced, you know, as a woman, as a person of color, but also, as you said, as an artist who's really not really fitting into anybody's pigeonhole in the music industry. She's carved out this kind of space for herself that has been copied by a lot of other artists more successfully on the charts. But I don't think there's a better songwriter working, you know, in that realm the last couple decades than Santi Gold. And this just continues that tradition. When you think of about a song like Shake, you know, I won't buckle under pressure, I'll be all right. You know, the whole idea of getting through it.
We don't got to wonder.
The whole importance of body music, you know, feeling yourself, being able to express yourself in an uninhibited way at the club. The club is the corollary to the church, where black people could be themselves. They could be who they were, express themselves freely without feeling like they're being constantly judged for who they were.
And talking about pain and endurance with humor is not to wallow in the misery, but to find catharsis in the joyful music that it's paired with.
Absolutely, and it's all here. She acknowledges the struggle, and this is the way to get through it.
If I cut my hair, hope I grow it long, back long, back time like way before. If I wear it straight, would they like me more? Like those girls on front covers. Long hair, make them stay little longer. Stay here, stay straight, though we feel the shame by the curls, waves, and natural things. Curls, waves, and natural things. Okay, one time, if I grow it long, am I good enough? Am I good enough? About time I embrace myself and soul. Time I feed my selfish soul.
That is a little bit of a track called Selfish Soul from the new album by Sudan Archives. That's how she says it on one song, Greg. Sudan. Natural Brown Prom Queen is the title of the second full album from Brittany Parks. She is the last artist we had in a live performance and interview before the pandemic, literally a week before the whole world shut down back in 2020. And now she is delivering her second record. You know, she's a violinist, among many other things. Grew up in Ohio, Cincinnati. Her dad worked for L.A. Reid and Babyface at LaFace Records. Initially had his daughter in a kiddie group called N2. There's a song on this album that reflects on that time of being put into a cookie-cutter mold that she has spent the rest of her career actively rejecting. In addition to the pizzicato violin, we have all sorts of other elements. Let's just play a song, and then we'll give our thoughts. This is the track Sierra, which I got to play because it's a shout-out to Chicago. Mm-hmm. You know, Sudan has a cousin in Chicago who will slap you in the face. I don't think she's talking about us, but here is Sudan Archives from Natural Brown Prom Queen.
About next time, if you want to spray it, say it to my face, if you're feeling brave. I got a cousin in Chicago.
That is Sierra from the new Sudan Archives record, Natural Brown Prom Queen. Jim, you had alluded to this earlier about the genre hopping on the Santi Gold record as well as this one. It's really kind of stunning. I think one of the reasons we wanted Sudan on the show when she was just finishing up that tour for the previous record. Fortunately, mm-hmm. we got her just in time before things went south with the
live music world COVID and everything else.
Crisis. Yeah, but this whole idea of you mentioned the last song referencing Chicago. You know, here's a woman from Cincinnati who is living in Southern California, but also absorbing a lot of music from African cultures. Mm-hmm. She's the violin playing is very inspired by West African music, right? She's a student of the world, and to me the whole idea of home is vital to this record. Where is home? In that song Homemaker at the very start, I think the message she's sending is home is wherever you are at that time.
Yeah, where you feel you belong.
I think there's a new generation of young people who are experiencing the world in a very different way than their predecessors have, and for her, this whole idea of like being confined to a region or a genre is just a foreign subject. She's grown up as a child of the world almost from the start, and her that has led to this music that is incredibly diverse. I mean, I'm hearing, six or seven genres being referenced in every song that she's done here.
Oh, yeah.
And to me, the really difficult part about this record that she somehow manages to pull off, despite the fact that this record seems to be all over the place, she's still creating these songs out of it, coherent songs.
Yeah.
So she's not struggling to mix and match. She's, in fact, very comfortable with that whole area. The one example I'll use is that OMG Brit, Oh My God Brit.
Yeah.
It's a trap hip-hop song. It may be the first trap rap song that I've heard with a zither on it. It's like, okay, where is that coming from?
Why twisting up what I say to you? The mess doesn't think I should have put my hands on you. A choke hug and a tug would have done you good. They never would have thought to come around my hood. Don't get it misunderstood. I wish you well. And I hope you find someone to deal with all that. Because I don't got the time for it.
The instrumentation from these really sophisticated violin loops to analog hand claps. I mean she's high tech, she's low tech. In the song Chevy S10, we have a 6-minute what could have been a progressive rock song with all these different movements. No genre boundaries, a wicked sense of humor. NBPQ, Topless, is a really funny rejection of her youth in that teen pop duo N2, mm-hmm. where she just wants to let it all hang out. Yeah, right. That's what she wanted then. That's what she wants now.
And she wanted a bazooki on that song for whatever reason. It sounds great.
The bazooki spoke to her. I just am so inspired by these artists who refuse to recognize genre, but at the end of the day, are great songwriters. And we can sit here and pick it apart like an excellent meal, by a superstar chef. Is that saffron? Yeah. I don't know. Or I can just turn it up and have fun.
No, exactly. So you don't have to do this forensic dive into all these different instruments, exotic instruments, because she makes it sound very, very seamless. That is what we thought of the new albums by Santi Gold and Sudan Archives, and now we want to hear from you. Leave us a voice message with your opinions on our website, soundopinions.org. Coming up, we're going to talk with author Marissa Moss about her new book, Her Country. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find IPAs, lemonade, shandy, and limited releases in-store or at one of Goose's venues in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been brewing award-winning beers in Chicago that are inspired by this city. Take 312 Lemonade Shandy, Tropical Beer Hug Double IPA, and a rotating series of hazy IPAs only available in Chicago. You know, every time we go down to Goose Island, there's another one that they're pushing on us.
That's right.
They're all good.
Absolutely. And what supporters of musical culture, you know, in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, if you go to a show in Chicago and you see that Goose Island sign, you know you're in good hands. They're music fans as well as great beer makers at Goose Island, so we're really proud to be associated with them.
The Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. And we are back. If you're a regular listener to this show, you probably know plenty about the many, many amazing female artists that are making country music today. We certainly are fans of many of them. But if you're only getting your information from the country music industry and the radio establishment in that genre, you might not even know these artists exist.
That's right, Jim. Our guest today, Marissa Moss, has a great new book on the phenomenon called Her Country. In that book, she focuses on three artists, Maren Morris, Mickey Guyton, and Casey Musgraves, three artists that we've talked about extensively on the show. She discusses the challenges they faced and overcame in the last decade. And I began our conversation by asking why she chose those three artists in particular to focus on.
I chose those three because they all have very different paths to unconventional success in country music. But they're also all three from Texas and kind of a relatively close geographic area. And that gave me a kind of fine-tuned way to examine their careers in ways that were kind of like comparing and contrasting with the common denominator of being Texas artists and making that same journey to Nashville around the same time. And also in Texas, you have Miranda Lambert, coming from Texas. You have the Chicks. You have Beyonce and Lizzo. So, something going on there. And my dad lived in Texas for many years, and I have, I spent summers there, so I have a connection, kind of a fascination with it.
Well, in Texas, with the reputation, right, Marissa, of being the alternative Nashville, the anti-Nashville, the outlaw.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't come out exactly where it's, the first half is Texas and the second half is Nashville, of course. But, I wanted to have a bit of that dual life. And I kind of wanted to say and have this subtext in there of talking about Texas in a way that is really reflected in what's going on kind of in our conversation right now. Even politically, in the way that people will kind of dismiss Texas and say, these terrible bills or something will come across and people will say, everyone in Texas deserved that, And I wanted to kind of have that exploration into Texans and Southerners and country music fans being far more than people often dismiss them as being.
Yeah, we all have loved ones in Texas who are not thinking like the people in the Texas State House.
Right, exactly. And same here as Nashville,
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these are iconoclastic artists, no doubt. And Texas is known. Let's go back to Willie Nelson, right? Iconoclasts seem to grow there, despite what people may think they know about Texas. But it's interesting to me, your book sort of addresses a subject that I think is, you know, there's a systemic problem in country music, and it probably could be said of just about anything in our society, but it's certainly true in country music. The good old boys club is going to run things. And there are moments, you begin in the book in a moment where there seemed to be a breakthrough. There had been a cluster of women artists, the then Dixie Chicks, now the Chicks, Faith Hill, Leanne Rimes, who were, you know, big country hits, Shania Twain. And then it went away. You know, the bubble burst, you know, and now we're back to the good old boys club. And Guyton and Morris and Musgraves are sort of fighting through that.
A startling statistic that Marissa reports that should frame this entire conversation. A mere 16% of the country airwaves is devoted to female artists. 16%!
Yeah, and that's actually the high estimation. So sometimes it's, you know, different. There's been a bunch of, you know, different statistics, mostly done by a really great data scientist out of Canada named Dr. Jada Watson. She found a lot of times it's 10%.
But yeah. I'm interested in that fluctuation. Like, there'll be times where it's proven that women can have hits that'll cross, you know, cross many genre lines and become embraced by the public in a massive way, but it doesn't stick. It should have proven that women more than deserve their place at the table, right? And yet that never really seems to happen. Why do you think that is?
Man, I mean, it's a lot of reasons. I mean, I think when that period was happening in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, you know, when most people think of country music of that era, you think of women. You know, with the exception of maybe Garth Brooks, if you're not a super country fan, you think of the women you mentioned, Faith Hill, Shania Twain, the Chicks. I mean, I think it was scary for a lot of people. And I think, you know, there are a lot of elements. It's a really long answer. And I guess that's in part why I wrote the book. But I mean, you have consolidation happening around, you know, rampant consolidation happening around that time. You lead into 9/11 when you have sort of this emergence of patriotic, nationalistic country songs.
Jingoism,
female ballad doesn't really work up against a song about putting a boot in a terrorist's ass, you know, on a playlist. It's it's kind of weird programming. And then you have what happened with the Chicks and speaking out against the war in Iraq. There are a lot of elements that we're just kind of stewing to make people skeptical of women, to let them indulge their already pre-existing misogyny. But I mean, in a more concrete way, that the more that you reduce the amount of times that people hear women on country radio, the less familiar it becomes. And therefore, people don't react as well to women's voices when you actually do hear it. So we have kind of created this myth that, you know, programmers will tell you, oh, women don't like listening to women, or people turn the dial when they hear women on country radio. And to some degree, we've created that scenario to be true because radio is all about what's familiar. You know, you're in the car, or you're like, you know, vacuuming with your earbuds in or whatever, you want to hear stuff that's familiar. And if you're not familiar with women's songs, then you're not going to maybe respond as well to it. It's not like some predisposed genetic, like, you know, disgust towards like high-pitched women's voices or like whatever people want to tell you. But it is like that we've created this culture of scarcity so much that, you know, women aren't getting those results that maybe make people feel empowered to play them more.
And yet it's so antithetical to the history of country music. You know, early in the book, Marissa, you give us the list. You know, Mother Maybelle Carter, mm-hmm. all right, and Dolly Parton, and Loretta Lynn, and Patsy Cline, and Bobby Gentry, and Tammy Wynette, and Tanya Tucker. It was always part and parcel of the development of this music. I was so glad to have some of my biases confirmed, because I always question myself. I've always been anti-Nashville industry. Right? Pro country music, the real stuff, starting with the Carter family, you know, and ending with, you know, Amanda Shires, okay? And it's like, man, but the stuff they turn out as product. And you paint this portrait of the sort of ingrained toxic masculinity. It's like, oh, it wasn't just me. You're documenting it. I'm not, biased against Nashville. I'm biased against that industry. You make the point that it's an inherently conservative mindset. It's Republican, and it doesn't seem to be women so much that they have a problem with in general. It's women who speak their minds. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what you call coming to be Dixie chicked, and explain how it, when Natalie Maines makes this comment,
we're ashamed the President of the United States is from Texas.
In the middle of the run-up to what is now documented as an unjust war in London, all right? And then the chicks get banned everywhere. You say that the Nashville industry actually was relieved.
I think so, in some ways. I know that's kind of a big statement, I guess. But the really interesting thing I found, and it was kind of a suspicion I had before I started writing this book, was that if it wasn't that incident, it would have been something else. So there was just this kind of like bubbling, I think, kind of fear of such powerful, outspoken women being the, kind of the biggest product of the genre at that time. They were in country music, but they were also at Lilith Fair, in crop tops. Right. That's scary for Nashville, I think, they were, Natalie Maines was kind of getting in, kerfuffles with Toby Keith even before that statement came out. And I went back through old issues of gossipy country magazines, and there were like these lists of times the Dixie Chicks have opened their mouth too much or something. But that was before the incident on stage. So that was already happening. Like there were people already just kind of ready to pounce.
Well, the thing about your book is that it highlights the fact that, you'd almost feel like it's this dark secret, but it's not a secret. Like the radio programmer who said the quiet part out loud, explain Tomatogate. I thought, I'm glad you brought that story up, because it's just, he really said that, right?
Yeah, and the crazy thing, and I'll give the quick Tomatogate explanation for your listeners who don't know, but there's in country music, as there is in all genres, there are these radio consultants you can hire to basically help you program your station and all that. And one of them was doing an interview with a trade, and he said that women are the tomatoes in the salad of country music, meaning you want to use them sparingly in the lettuce of the Luke Bryans. And, plop a few sliced tomatoes on there. And everyone was really mad outside. It was called, Tomato Gate. People were outraged. And I felt kind of funny in that time because, the guy who said it, he sucks. But I mean, that's sort of, like you said, he said the quiet part out loud. Like, it was kind of ridiculous to see people mad at him when he was only saying what has been the truth for so long in the way that so many people program, or the labels who were like outraged at it, but yet, weren't pushing their female artists to country radio with, the same kind of promo budget, because they know that to be true. Like, it was very bizarre. Like, you should be mad at the problem, not what he said. He was saying what all of you do in practice, It was a very strange thing. And in some ways, I'm almost relieved that it happened, because, he said it out loud, and then we could talk about it.
Marissa Moss, we are talking to the author of Her Country, incredibly important book and great book to read. And Marissa's my hero. Boy, you're as frank talking. You admit in your afterword that after you wrote for the first time your first heavy duty piece on the sexism in country music, the country music industry, different than country music, you were afraid you might get run out on a rail from Nashville, which hasn't happened yet, you write, but there's still time. Now the book's out. Are they at your door, Marissa?
I don't know. Everyone's been a little quiet. I mean, the funny thing is that has always happened. I mean, it happens whether I put out, I publish an article, I write a book, or I say something on Twitter, I'll get all these texts from people being like, oh, you love what you said, from people in the Nashville music industry, or we love you, so glad you said that. But none of them will say anything publicly. Mm. They like to just kind of tell me on the sly. Yeah. And I'm like, well, that's kind of worse. Yeah. You know, like, yeah. You know, that's like the, you know, showing up at the, you know, working for the Trump administration, but like trying to whisper that you voted for Obama. That doesn't make me feel better.
Right.
About it, you know. I'm still here. Yeah. But
well, you know, my late friend Chrissy Dickinson wrote a lot about country, and she told me early on that there was the circle the wagons approach. If you weren't down with the program, suddenly, you know, your invitations to shows, your product to review, you know, slowed to a trickle. You didn't get in, you got denied interviews because you're a hatchet woman, you know, those kind of attitudes crop up. So it seems like a very insular society. But one of the things that I'm noticing, Marissa, it seems like the country scene is a little slower in terms of the industry, in terms of being where, say, pop music is or indie music is, in terms of radio isn't the only game in town anymore. But it still seems like commercial radio plays a really important role in breaking country songs. Like, if you're going to make it in that genre, you need to have the mainstream terrestrial radio stations behind you. Is that true still? Is it starting? It's not frittering away at all? That influence?
I mean, it isn't. If you're talking about a certain kind of success, I think it's surprising for people, because if you talk to folks who don't listen to country music regularly, they'll be like, why are you so concerned with radio? Mm-hmm. Like, I haven't turned on the radio in like 10 years, you know? And in country music, it's still so important. One, because Nashville is so slow to change and so resistant to change. Two, radio is, you know, there are country fans all over. I know that to be a fact, you know, in New York, in Seattle, in Tennessee, everywhere, people who love
even in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. Even in Hollywood. But I mean, there are still a lot of country fans in rural America. And the, you know, I think a surprising thing that people don't think about a lot is that access to really reliable broadband and Wi-Fi is still a problem in a lot of rural America. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's the same reason why you see a lot of people turning to, you know, kind of radical conservative hosts on talk radio, you know, through their AM stations. It's accessible. Mm-hmm. That's why you get some, like, well, why sometimes I'll bring up sort of like wonky issues, you know, in terms of like widening broadband access and stuff like that when it comes to how to solve this problem. Because if all you can get is, you know, country radio in your car and your 40-minute hour-long drive to your job or wherever, or out in, you know, working out in the field or wherever you are, that's what you're going to listen to. And it's, you know, if you can't get a good, you know, Sirius XM, or you can't, you know, get the signal to get Spotify, or you don't want to afford it, it's accessibility a lot of times.
All you got in the old pickup is the AM/FM radio.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up, we hear some of Marissa's favorite songs from female country artists. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions.
I've cursed on a Sunday.
Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries, and kept the kids in the United States? Believe it or not, 6 years later, there are still hundreds of families who have not yet been reunited.
Though we as a community may feel hopeless at times, we recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice.
Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families ripped apart by the zero-tolerance policy of the previous administration. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling they need in order to heal and get back on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like us and believe that all families belong together, then join us supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. That's gum.fm/charity.
You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, elotrolado.org/volunteer.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back. This week we're talking with author Marissa Moss about her new book, Her Country. Let's get back to the conversation.
The problem with writing a great piece of investigative reporting, as Marissa has done, is that they forget you're also a music lover and a music critic. I know about this, right? Give us a tune by each of the three core artists you focus on and tell us what inspired you about the song and about the artist.
I love that question because a lot of folks have asked me why I picked these three. And there are a lot of reasons I have and I did. But at the end of the day, I love their music. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a fan of these artists and a fan of country music. And sometimes when I'll run a story, people will like come onto my Twitter or send me emails or whatever, being like, why do you hate country music so much? Yeah. You know, they'll think that me criticizing the industry or certain artists be like, you hate it. Like, you know, go back to where mm-hmm. you came from. You clearly hate country music. And it's always funny to me because why the hell would I do mm-hmm. this if I didn't love it? Like, I don't fight for things that I don't care about, you know? I hate cream cheese so much. And like, if it exploded off the earth tomorrow, I would not care. Like, I wouldn't fight for it to exist anymore.
Right. You want this genre to be all that it should be and can be.
Yeah. Because I love it. Like, I mean, that's why I stick around time and time after again, you know? Why I'm here.
Yeah, so Maren Morris, just tell us a little bit about her. Let's start with Maren. And we've reviewed her on the show. But for those who don't know, Maren Morris, and give us a tune that inspires you.
Yeah, so Maren is from Texas. Started out singing when she was really young, you know, around 8 or so. And teeny little girl with a giant-ass guitar playing in, like, honky-tonks and dance halls in Texas. Found some incredible pictures of her, literally with, like, guitars, like, twice the size, you know, that she is with, you know, band full of dudes behind her, and came to Nashville about 10 years ago. I remember when she came to town, there was kind of this like, just, I guess that star factor that just kind of immediately jumped out in her writing. You hear those whispers, you know, about people. And I kind of immediately heard that about Maren because she's such a strong writer. She's an incredible singer, but she's also just a strong writer and just so unique kind of in her identity. Mm-hmm. The first song that I heard from Maren actually wasn't My Church, which was her breakthrough mm-hmm. song. The first song that I heard from Maren was a song called Loose Change that ended up making it onto the High Women record, her super group band with Amanda Shires, Brandi Carlile, and Natalie Hemby.
The love has lost its shine. Used to make me feel like a million bucks, and now you got me feeling like loose change.
And that one I always go back to because it was that first moment, you know, where I just was kind of gobsmacked by her talent. And I was so happy when I heard that it was making the High Women mm-hmm. record. This actually like sounds like a humble brag, but I was in the studio watching the High Women doing some recording, and Dave Cobb was there, the producer of the record, and he told me that it was on there. And I think I literally like welled up. Mm. I was so excited. I don't know, it's just some really genius writing.
Yeah, it's a great song. Great. Well, so as unique as Maren is, Mickey Guyton, even more unique.
Yeah, she is. And Mickey Guyton, same, you know, came from Texas, moved to Nashville around 10 years ago. You know, Mickey was not, you know, in bands growing up. She sung in church. And She moved out to LA for a while because she felt like she wasn't, you know, country music wasn't a place for a Black woman. Yeah. But she grew up, you know, loving Leanne Rimes and Dolly Parton. And her sound, I think, is so interesting to look at in the context of the other two, because it's very, I think it could exist alongside, you know, Carrie Underwood on country radio. It's, you know, powerhouse vocals, you know, appeals to a mainstream or a pop country fan. But on her album that just came out last year, I've lost track of time, I think it was last year, you know, really pushed the limits of songwriting and, you know, her own sort of activism in place and agency is a Black woman in country music. And I saw her sing this song, What Are You Gonna Tell Her, at the Ryman during a country radio seminar showcase about like a month before the COVID shutdown. And this was after, you know, she had been in Nashville for almost a decade and feeling like nothing was ever gonna happen for her. And she sung this song, What Are You Gonna Tell Her, about sort of, you know, the lyric is, what are you going to tell her when she's wrong? You know, this little girl with dreams that she can be anything, and realizing that, you know, she might be wrong because this country still hasn't changed enough. And she sung this to a group of, you know, 90% white male radio programmers, you know, sitting there just kind of like fearless.
She thinks love is love, and if you work hard, that's enough. Skin's just skin and it doesn't matter. And that her friend's older brother's gonna keep his hands to himself. And that somebody's gonna believe her when she tells. But what are you gonna tell her when she's wrong? Will you just try and say it's been that way all along?
Knowing that they would never play it, knowing that it would maybe dig her an even deeper hole away from where she wanted to go, and she didn't care. She just, and belted it beautifully. I mean, her voice is stunning, especially live. You know, you just hear all, you know, little choices that she makes that are really beautiful. And the most incredible thing was sort of watching her kind of lean into that truth and the COVID quarantine and, you know, in the wake of the murder of George Floyd, just kind of speaking her truth and writing songs about it. And still, you know, she hasn't been played on country radio. She sang at the freaking Super Bowl and they still wouldn't add her.
Yeah.
But, you know, still, you know, finding fans her own way.
Too controversial.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, Kacey Musgraves won Album of the Year from the Grammys, even though her record really wasn't embraced by country radio, right? I mean, what happened? How do you explain her rise and what initially attracted you to her?
Yeah, Kacey... it was a similar kind of thing with Maren that I was hearing, you know, chatter about Kacey around in, I guess it was like 2012, right around when I moved to Nashville. My husband went to that same, he was working in music publishing at the time. He went to the same CRS country radio seminar showcase at the Ryman in 2012 and saw her sing Merry-Go-Round. And he immediately came out and called me. And he was almost like a little choked up. Like he was very, like, just kind of stunned, but we didn't what he had seen.
And it don't matter if you don't believe. Come Sunday morning, you best be there in the front row like you're supposed to. Same hurt in every heart. Same trailer, different park. Mama's hooked on.
And she came out, you know, she sung this song kind of criticizing, you know, apathy and small town life as her, a slow tempo song as her first single, you know, as a woman in country music at the time of Florida Georgia Line and Jason Aldean, like Party Bus or whatever, White Claw song. and that's...
I never wanted to think about that song again. Thank you, Marissa.
Sorry. And, you know, that just, it's so bold. All the choices that she made were so bold. And so, I mean, she's just an incredible writer and singer and kept, you know, her next album, I feel like is kind of a little bit underappreciated. pageant material. It's just like this really like relaxed, a little bit countrypolitan, a little bit Stone, mm-hmm. like kind of this like, you know, 20s kind of apathy, like, but in the context of country music, it's so beautiful to me. And then she had a Christmas album in Between the Two, which is freaking awesome. And I'm, you know, a Jew from New York. I like, you know, I love that album.
Usually the sign of creative bankruptcy when somebody puts out the Christmas album.
This one's amazing. It's so good. You know, it has originals, like great country, you know, country Christmas originals. Love it. And then she came out with Golden Hour and won album of the year, which Nashville should have been like puffing up its like peacock feathers about, you know, like, but instead they were like, oh, we don't like think she, you know, the programmers were like, we don't think she's friendly enough or whatever. So we're still not going to play her songs. She just does whatever she feels is creatively enriching and right to her at the moment, you know? I love traditional country music, and I love the tradition. The genre stuff, I don't worry too much about. Mm-hmm. You know, genre is kind of a marketing term to me, so I don't really know whether her current album is country or not country, but I know that much less country people that were men were able to put out music and exist in the country space while we got kind of mad about Kacey Musgraves doing
that's
it.
That's for sure.
That's all I know.
Well, As strong a critic as she is, investigative reporter, Marissa Moss, what a fantastic book. What an inspiring book. Thank you for highlighting those artists for us. Let's try to end on an optimistic note. I don't know if we have one. even if broadband and the delay of much of rural America is, you know, still pumping up radio, right? The major label system is dying. You know, Nashville as an industry is not going to exist that much longer. Is there hope for the future, you know, in terms of artists breaking away from this restrictive good old boy network, as you say?
Yes, I think there is. I think that's the only way that you can keep going is to find that hope. And there are artists now that are, they're banding together with one another, for one. To kind of form this, Alison Rushell described as like this, the Rainbow Coalition, you know, just banding together to create something new. You know, you have the Black Opry, this touring review of Black country artists, and you have, you know, women and non-binary folks, you know, making their own templates for how to succeed in country music and who gets to own the idea of country music. Yeah. And that's really exciting to me, and that keeps me optimistic. And I know there's a lot to be angry about, and I get angry a lot, and the book is angry at times. But when I need to feel optimistic, I just put on a record. Yeah. I mean, I know that sounds dorky, but I mean, that's it. I mean, I put on a record that I'm into or an old one that I loved, and that's the only thing that helps.
I think the three artists you cited and followed, you know, for the last 10 years in terms of how they developed and how they broke through are an example of women who are coloring outside the very narrow boundaries of what country is supposed to be, right? And expanding the genre by expanding the idea that people who aren't exactly like this formula are worth listening to as well. So it seems like, even though we were talking about an industry being this incredibly conservative industry, these women have found a way to operate outside of those boundaries and like make the machine bend to them a little bit. I mean, is that too optimistic? Are we going to have another, is it going to be like 2005 again, where after this rush of vital women performers, we're going to see a backlash and it's going to all fold up again?
That can't happen again, Greg. You wrote the book about the death of that old school music industry. Yeah. That doesn't exist anymore.
I wish I killed it. I wish it was buried.
You know, Taylor Swift accepted.
Yeah.
I think it's still Jason Aldean getting number one over and over again.
Yeah.
So that part is existing and will continue to exist and is not going to change. And, you know, as you said, like, you know, the infrastructure in Nashville will eventually dismantle out of refusal to embrace the future,
yeah.
or the present.
Yeah.
And, you know, women will just keep making mm-hmm. music and finding their audience. Mm-hmm. I wish it were easier. And I wish that women that wanted the same tools that, you know, the Jakes and the Lukes and the Blakes could have, you know, they should have those available to them if they want to use them. But they're also finding a way to do it without any of that stuff.
Country music, the good stuff, the new punk rock.
Yeah.
Not for another way.
The old punk
well,
rock.
Well, you know, I mean, the synergies even across genres, Brandi Carlile sitting down and giving us Joni Mitchell, right?
Yeah, man. I haven't, like, fully been able to watch all that yet. It's like a little...
Yeah. It is. It makes me verklempt. Yeah. We've been talking to Marissa Moss, author of this fantastic and very important new book, Her Country, How the Women of Country Music Became the Success They Were Never Supposed to Be, at least according to the good old boys. But screw them, says Marissa and Jim and Gray. Thank you, Marissa, for coming on Sound Opinions.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
Don't want to be a part of
That wraps up our chat with Marissa Moss, and now we want to hear from you. Who are your favorite women making country music today? If you want to let us know your opinions, leave a voice message on our website, soundopinions.org. We'd love to share your thoughts on the air, like these listeners' comments on recent episodes.
New messages.
Hello, Jim and Greg. This is Chris from Sandwich, Illinois. Just wanted to call to say my opinion of the new Dawes, The Misadventures of the Doomscroller, is a pure masterpiece from Dawes. I cannot believe the three listens I've had already. Just never heard a band playing so live, so together, so feeling good. And I'm feeling great tonight. Thank you so much. Bye.
Hey, Jim. Hey, Greg. This is Ethan, coming to you from New Jersey. A great music documentary that comes to my mind is It Might Get Loud, with Jimmy Page, The Edge, and Jack White. I think it's a great documentary because it showcases how they created their signature sound, and all in all, just really cool to see a couple of legends.
My pick for a hero song is Jack of Spades by Boogie Down Productions, that was made for the movie I'm Gonna Get You Sucker and was on the album Ghetto Music, The Blueprint of Hip Hop. This song is literally about a movie hero character, but it's what makes Jack Spade a hero that is so important.
You seem to think that everybody can be taught, that everyone else could be bought, but you took a short, this one guy hasn't been paid. He is the Jack of Spades.
Jack, 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 Jack.
It was great breaking out this album to listen to the song. It's been a while. It was a bit sad to realize how relevant so much of this album is today, 33 years later. But that also speaks to how smart this album was back in 1989 when it came out.
Hello, Sound Opinions people. This is George. I'm thinking about songs about the sea. Sinead Lohan, Diving to Be Deeper, as well as OMD, Sailing on the Seven Seas. A little more pop sensibility on them, but pretty good tunes. Thank you.
Hello, Sound Opinions. This is Rory in Oakland. Thanks for the show on films. That was really good. Inspired me to think about a film that I would like to see made if I had $120 million, which is one on the UFO Club. That was the underground club in London that brought us Pink Floyd, Fairport Convention, the crazy world of Arthur Brown, Jimi Hendrix. Many more got their start in that 1 year span of time that club was operating. I think it would be a crazy movie to do, and you can do a lot of crazy things with it. I would love to see that as a big feature film that is made. So that is my idea for a film. Hopefully somebody that has influence is hearing this message, and go do it. All right. Thanks.
No more messages.
Thanks again to everyone who left us a message. It's always great to hear from our listeners. Mr. Cott, what do we have on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, we are going to unearth some buried treasures.
Ah.
Music flying under the mainstream radar that we think you need to hear. And don't forget to check out our bonus podcast feed for new additions to the Desert Island Jukebox.
Always good stuff, Greg. The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to Sound Opinions and not necessarily to Columbia College Chicago or our sponsors. Thanks, as always, to our Patreon supporters. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, and our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo. Our Columbia College intern is Lauren Holt, and our social media consultant is Katie Cott.